for security? There's a ton of content out there, and if you don't know where to start, it can be overwhelming, even paralyzing. So let's fix that. Welcome to Simply Cyber, a community of tens of thousands of aspiring and active cybersecurity professionals focused on networking, knowledge sharing, and professional development. I'm Dr. Gerald Osher, Chief Content Creator at Simply Cyber, inviting you to get the answers to your cybersecurity problems with hundreds of cybersecurity videos answering your frequently asked questions, interviewing industry experts, and live streaming daily cyber threat briefings hosted by me. Now get the stories and insights you won't find anywhere else. Hit subscribe now and dig into all the fresh content on the channel and in the community. Nothing should stop you from launching and leveling up your cybersecurity career today. All right, everybody, welcome to the party. Good morning. Today is Monday, April 15th, tax day. Wah, wah, wah. This is episode number 600. That's right, 600. Milestone. Ding, judges. Guys, this is episode 600 of Simply Cyber's Daily Cyber Threat Brief Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Gerald Osher, and over the next 45 minutes to an hour or so, me, you, Zatalpa, Matt McDaniel, and Texarkana, Alpha Sierra, Zemith, Viper Nil, Marcus Kyler and the Yeet Crew, Terry Stokes, folks over on LinkedIn like Logan Fuller and Raymond Cruz, we're all going to be shredding the top cybersecurity news stories of the day, and I'll be giving my expert opinion and analysis on each of those stories, on what it means to you as a practitioner, so how can you use this information to drive cyber risk reduction for your business stakeholders. And if you're looking to break into the industry, believe me, you're going to be asked in any single job interview, how do you stay current on the topics in the industry? This right here is an absolute banger of an answer, if I do say so myself. Just as a bit of a programming note, I do not prepare or research for any of these stories. So what you're about to get is my rough, rugged, raw opinion on all of these things. I always try to mine out some valuable nugget of info around best practices or whatever. So it's going to be a great show. We always have one. Hashtag Team SC if you're a regular in chat. And if you're a first timer, shout it out with a hashtag first timer in chat. We have a special sound effect and a special emote just for you first timers, because we love welcoming people and letting them know that they don't have to be shy. This is a very supportive, inclusive community and one that's all about good times. So giddy up in here. Now, before we get into it, let me give a shout out and some love to the stream sponsors. Start with my good friends over at Barricade Cyber Solutions. Barricade Cyber Solutions are dedicated to helping businesses recover from cyber attacks and the damage done. Cyber attacks, they suck. They can cause massive issues for businesses and send dedicated, hardworking business owners in turmoil. But guess what, haircut fish? Guess what? Kimberly can fix it. Barricade Cyber Solutions knows how to mitigate the damage done by cyber incidents. Believe that. They take threat actors and yeet them right out the environment. Compromise, no more. Catch them outside. How about that? Go to barricadecyber.com. Links in the description below to giddy up on that. Now, we got a new sponsor. Holler at you. I got one for you. Here we go. I want to say welcome to the party, pal. Welcome to the party, pal, for our new sponsor. Let me go ahead and bring this up here. Guys, I'm pretty excited about this one just because I've been using these guys for a hot minute, and I'm pretty excited about it, okay? As a person that exists publicly, right, I'm all up in YouTube's face all the time, and I share my opinions and I share my hot takes daily. I am hyper aware of safety and security, especially I have a family to worry about. It's even easier to find personal information about people online nowadays. All this data is hanging out on the internet and can have real life consequences in the real world. I recently found a solution, and this is a service called Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal info from the largest people search databases on the web, like data brokers, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. When you sign up to tell Delete Me what data you want deleted, and they go off and take care of it, it's actually quite nice. It's pretty hands-free once you just set it up. You get a personalized privacy report showing you what info they found. I was surprised and stunned what I saw in my privacy report. where they found it, and most importantly, what was removed or in the process of being removed. The cool thing is Delete Me does all the hard work. Literally, all you did was fill out a form and they took care of the rest. It's basically outsourcing managing your online privacy. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me now at the special discount for Simply Cyber listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com /simplycyber and use promo code SimplyCyber at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com /simplycyber and enter the code SimplyCyber at checkout. J-O-I-N, where is this? Where? Hold on, where is it? joindeleteme.com /simplycyber. Guys, I'm serious. Like, literally, someone on Discord the other day said they were going to SWAT me. Like, literally, we had to ban somebody off Discord because of that. So I take this privacy quite legit, quite seriously. This Delete Me thing is legit, guys. I got it. It was pretty impressive, pretty hands-free. So check it out, if you would, at joindeleteme.com /simplycyber. I see we got some first-timers in chat. Herdy Seams. Welcome to the party, pal. Flying Butter, welcome to the party, pal. Nathan Zamora, hashtag first timer. Does it count if this is my first time catching the stream live? Nathan, let me check with the judges. Judges, I'm getting nods, Nathan. Welcome to the party, pal. Welcome, everybody. Super pumped to have you here, Nathan, and other first timers. Let me go ahead and drop those emotes in here. Where's my emotes? Very nice. All right. Also, Anti-Siphon Training, but more about them at the mid-roll. Remember, every single episode of Simply Cyber's Daily Cyber Threat Brief is worth half a CPE. So be sure to say what's up in chat. Grab a screenshot. That's all it is. And, file it away. Once a year, count how many files you have and delete. Multiply by 0.5. That's all you got. Simple as that. All right. So first timers, long timers, we got 600 episodes. If you guys want, we could talk about that hot mess at Jawjack, and if you want to hear about it. Guy was trying to push Black Hat tooling on the server, accused me of doing some things that I had absolutely nothing involved with, and we had to drop the banhammer. All right, guys, super pumped. Have a great day, Jenny Housley. All right, guys. So as fun as it is to talk about the sponsors and talk about banhammers, what we need to do is get to work. So do me a favor. Grab your cup of coffee or your favorite drink. Dude, so awesome. 600 episodes. Woo! Super pumped. All right, guys. Grab it all up and let's slide to the left, to the left. Let's slide and get into the top cybersecurity news stories of the day. I can't wait. Sit back, relax. Oh, I didn't even open the stories. I was so confused with with all the... hold on one second. I got to do all this. There was a lot going on. I hope everybody had a great weekend. I did a lot of manual labor, so my back hurts because I'm 40 plus, and my body doesn't quite snap back the way it once did. All right, y'all. Do me a favor. Sit back, relax, and let's let the cool sounds of the hot news wash over us in an awesome wave. I will see you at the mid-roll. Let's go.
From the CISO series, it's cybersecurity headlines.
These are the cybersecurity headlines for Monday, April 15th, 2024. I'm Sean Kelly.
Yes, thank you all for the well wishes about 600 episodes. 600, it's amazing. I can't believe we just did 500 the other day, it feels like. And as I always say, guys, the show doesn't work without you. This community is freaking amazing. Thank you all so very much for making it what it is today. Literally, coffee cup cheers to you. You guys are the heroes. Thank you so much for making this community so amazing and so just inclusive and a place to be. All right, let's go.
The House voted Friday to reauthorize a key U.S. government surveillance tool following a showdown in the House over whether the FBI should be restricted from using the program to search for Americans' data. The spy tool has been renewed several times since it was first authorized in 2008 and has aided in disrupting terror attacks, cyber intrusions, and foreign espionage. The legislation also permits the U.S. government to collect communications of non-Americans located outside the country without a warrant. The bipartisan bill would extend the surveillance program for 2 years instead of the originally proposed 5-year period and will now need to quickly clear the Senate before it expires on April 19th.
All right. So, you know, I don't know. I wasn't following this. This is a privacy thing more than a security thing, but there is overlap, if you guys didn't know, between privacy and InfoSec or cybersecurity. Think of like a Venn diagram. The intersection is really that confidentiality security objective. So from time to time, we do dip our toes in the privacy water. It's not uncommon at like mid-sized organizations for the CISO to also be responsible for privacy. Larger organizations will have a committed privacy office, especially ones that handle sensitive information like healthcare institutions and things of that such. So House passes reauthorization of U.S. surveillance program, basically allowing the FBI to spy on U.S. citizens. There's long been a standing in the country that, you know, you're not allowed to spy on U.S. citizens. 9/11 happened, the Patriot Act. We eroded some of our civil rights in order to be secure, and it just continues on. As I mentioned in the ad rolls with data brokers, dude, delete me. Literally, when you sign up with Delete Me and you look at where all your data is, it's kind of like, alarming. So this would allow them, access to that data, I'm sure, and maybe putting taps and stuff on you, querying ISPs for your network traffic, etc. So it sounds like there's some, bickering amongst the federal lawmakers, which is pretty common nowadays, unfortunately, more interested in individual agenda instead of like the greater good of society. But whatever, this should not surprise you. Honestly, guys, at this point in our society, like, I just assume you're being surveilled, right? Like, this is the federal government not being able to surveil you, but big tech has access to all your stuff. You should go look at how reCAPTCHA, you know, the reCAPTCHA where you click on the box that says you're not a human. You should go look at how that actually works and what Google is looking at to validate that you're a human and not a robot. It's spoiler alert, it's basically all of your you know, internet traffic history. So privacy, it's not really a thing. The one thing I'll say about this is you might think, what's the big deal? They only spy on, you know, terrorists, right? Like, terror has, they said that like terror attacks have been stopped and all these other things have been stopped. Yes, true. But there's a human on the other end of it, right? So the human is like doing it for law enforcement purposes. Perfect. Well, then let's say that same human is going through a nasty divorce and then starts using that technology to spy on their spouse, or they have a, an unhealthy, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, not addiction, but an unhealthy attraction to somebody not interested in them. And they start using the system to spy on them in a very creepy way, right? Oh, no, that couldn't happen. Yeah, it happens. It happens all the time. Humans are human and they make human choices, right? So that's the argument against mass surveillances, right? Like, guys, in 1984, right? Just really quickly to play it out. In 1984, Orwellian's world, right? If you give full surveillance, mass surveillance, 100% surveillance, you could stop any crime, right? Because you'll have complete visibility over everyone's decisions. At the same time, you have zero privacy, right? So, and then 100% privacy, anonymous, everything. You can't stop anything, basically. So it's somewhere in the middle. All right, let's go.
Roku says 576,000 accounts compromised in latest security breach. Following up on a story we brought to you on cybersecurity headlines, Roku announced Friday that 576,000 Roku accounts were compromised in a cyber attack it suffered last month. Accounts were compromised by a credential stuffing attack where hackers use usernames and passwords stolen from other platforms to log into their victims' accounts. Roku said malicious actors used the access to make unauthorized purchases of streaming subscriptions and other Roku products, saying that it would refund those purchases. Roku has notified affected customers and reset their passwords. The company has also enabled two-factor authentication for all accounts.
All right. Hey, Sonny, we see the baton. Thanks, community, for pushing for Sonny to get the baton. We will make sure that Sonny gets the baton today. All right, so check it out. Roku, credential stuffing attack, 500,000 accounts compromised. TLDR, Roku's security was wonderful. They didn't require multi-factor authentication, obviously, but basically a credential stuffing attack is where a threat actor gets creds from somewhere else, right? Like whatever, LinkedIn breach, data breach, Telegram, info stealer scraping, whatever, and tries to log into Roku with those same credentials. So if you're reusing credentials, meaning you have the same password on more than one site, and you don't have multi-factor, that's what happened, okay? So, 23andMe, famously 23andMe, like the gene DNA sequence, hereditary company, whatever they do, whatever. They recently had a similar compromise and blamed all their users for having passwords, which is not a best practice. Again, I said that at the time. It looks like Roku handled this quite gracefully. So one, they're refunding any fraudulent purchases. Two, Roku has forced reset all those accounts. So FYI, this right here is the playbook on how to do it. 23andMe is a playbook on how not to do it. In fact, you could even, if you really wanted to get spicy, right? You could pull out the 23andMe story and this Roku story and then set up a tabletop exercise. But don't reveal this part yet, but set up a tabletop exercise with, looks like a credential stuffing attack. Here's what credential stuffing is. What do we do? How do we respond as a company? It's less of an IT thing and more of a organizational thing. And then after the exercise is done, you could present these two use cases as examples, as case studies on how other companies have used it and how one of them is a train wreck and how the other one is chef's kiss. Way to go, Roku. I know you're like the little cousin of Apple TV and Amazon Fire Sticks, which is too bad because Roku was first to the game. I feel like I had a Roku in like 2005. There was like no streaming apps at the time. So anyways, way to go. I do want to dig a little deep for one hot second. You might say, well, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? In less than 400 cases, malicious actors logged in and made unauthorized purchases for streaming subscriptions. Now you might say, what's the big deal? Well, there's two things going on here. One, some threat actors will sell access on the dark web to streaming services. So like basically I log in and like for $20, somebody gives me a bunch of creds for like Apple TV, Netflix, Spotify, whatever. And then I log in and basically like siphon those streaming services while someone else is paying for it. That's one. Two, and I can't guarantee this happened, and there's probably a little bit more preparation involved, but I have seen in the past where threat actors will put products on Amazon it's like a book with no pages in it, right? So self-publish a book. The book is $1,000 or $999. And literally threat actors will steal credentials and then log in and purchase the digital book for $999 on someone's account. The threat actor is the one who owns the book, owns the account. So that money processes through. And that's how the threat actor basically monetizes the stolen credentials. Again, I'm not saying that happened in this instance, but that I just wanted to share it because it is a novel technique that you see threat actors do occasionally. I haven't seen it in a few years, but I can envision where they log in with a compromised Roku credentials, and then they sign up for streaming services that are actually threat actor controlled resources in order to get paid. And if someone isn't watching their credit card, you know, all of a sudden there's an extra $18 charge per month showing up, and it just slides right through. All right.
Microsoft breach exposed federal agencies to hacking. The U.S. government said Thursday that Russian state-backed hackers known as Midnight Lizard and Cozy Bear, who hacked Microsoft corporate emails back in January, obtained passwords and other information that could allow them to breach U.S. agencies. The announcement revealed that earlier this week, CISA issued a rare emergency directive requiring agencies to change stolen credentials and investigate other potential risks. CISA said it's still unclear whether the threat actors actually obtained anything from the exposed agencies. Microsoft's operating systems and applications like Outlook are used throughout the U.S. government, but the longtime relationship is showing increasing signs of strain.
All right. Yes. I mean, this is pretty standard, right? Hold on. Jesus Christ. This is pretty standard. So if you weren't paying attention, like Microsoft, obviously, Fortune 5 company, Office 365 / Azure is used by probably most of the Fortune 500 companies for their IT infrastructure backend. Exchange Online is where a lot of email goes. Just recently, Microsoft got breached. There was like the golden ticket thing. There were some federal accounts compromised, and it turned out to be a bigger deal than what it originally looked like. There was also this right here on Friday last week. If you're watching on screen, I just pulled up Emergency Directive 2402. You'll notice the date. This was literally last Friday, where CISA issued an emergency directive, which they don't typically do, saying that they need companies to mitigate the significant risk from nation-state compromise of Microsoft's corporate email system. And Midnight Blizzard, which is a Chinese-based organization, they're saying that agencies needed to analyze the content of exfiltrated emails, reset compromised creds, and take steps to secure privileged Azure accounts. So they were saying that they had recognized and noted that there was an active issue. You know, hopefully this got cleaned up over the weekend. I'm sorry for those engineers who had to work over the weekend on this, but this was an emergency. And basically, you know, federal agencies are getting frustrated by this. Now, I do want to point out that SolarWinds attack was Russian-based, and this is Chinese issues, but I don't know if Russia and China are like high-fiving in the background and sharing stuff, but that SolarWinds compromise was so deep and so ubiquitous a hack that this, you know, it could, in theory, have led to some of this level of action. The problem is, like every other vendor, if you will, it's very difficult to pivot off of a vendor where you have everything integrated into it. It's a thing called vendor lock-in. Okay, really quickly, just a more you know kind of situation. Vendor lock-in is the concept where it costs more money or it's more of a burden to get off of a vendor platform than it is to just stay on. Imagine, if you will, you're in Microsoft Office 365 and you're absolutely pissed. You're like, enough of this, enough of this, enough of this. We're getting off. Okay, what does that migration look like? If you're the Department of the Environmental Protection Agency, just to pick a random federal agency, right? Or you're the DEA, okay? Or whatever, Department of Treasury, pick one. You've got tens of thousands of people. You've got engineers all over the place. This isn't like, oh, hey, we're just going to stand up Google Workspaces and send everybody a quick email and we're off and running. No, it will take months and months and months of planning, preparation, execution, education for end users. Help desk needs to get on board. Staff needs to have the skill and experience to be able to understand how to use the new platform. It's a major effort. You're taking people off projects to focus on the transition project, okay? Or you just deal with it and kick the can down the road. And that's what vendor lock-in is. That's, by the way, that's why it's super easy to get on board with a vendor. Hey, we'll let you try it for 90 days for absolutely $0. Hey, we've got a tool that can ingest data from Google Workspaces into Microsoft Office, right? Or Office 365, right? Migration tools, they're everywhere. You know what you won't find? like an exfiltration tool. Vendors don't provide migration tools out of their platform. They make it hard to get off of their platform, okay? Look at Splunk. Splunk, whew, well, traditionally, Splunk has been pricey, but moving to any other SIM is burdensome, okay? So just be mindful of what vendor lock-in is. And as much as federal agencies might be like pissy about this with Microsoft, many of them aren't going to do anything, right?
Ex-security engineer jailed for $12.3 million in crypto thefts. Shakib Ahmed has been sentenced for hacking cryptocurrency exchanges back in July of 2022. The DOJ said Ahmed was a senior security engineer for an unnamed international tech company. His resume included specialized skills like reverse engineering smart contracts and blockchain audits, which ultimately helped him to execute the hacks. Ahmed exploited a security flaw in an unnamed crypto exchange's smart contracts to manipulate pricing and withdraw millions of dollars worth of inflated fees. He then contacted the company and tried to return the funds if the exchange agreed not to alert law enforcement about the attack. Oh, Ahmed also allegedly siphoned $3.6 million from the Nirvana Finance Exchange, ultimately leading to its shutdown. He then laundered the stolen assets by moving them through crypto mixers. Ahmed received a 3-year jail term, 3 years of supervised release, was ordered to forfeit $12.3 million, and pay $5 million in restitution to both impacted exchanges.
I'm a crypto evangelist.
All right.
I love it, love it, love it.
What a clown. What a clown. Hold on, let me get rid of this delete me thing here. What a clown. Okay, so, all right. So this guy basically was a really, really smart guy working for Amazon, reverse engineering smart contracts. He's all up in the blockchain. This guy is a NFT loving machine. And he basically, realized how he could exploit smart contracts to get paid. He basically robbed a company and then tried to give the money back in exchange for them not alerting law enforcement. Brosif. You could have just done vulnerability disclosure and tried to get like a bug bounty and instead of whatever you did. And then like furthermore, he did rob some people and he got caught. Okay. So yes, smart contracts, immutable ledgers, all these things. And you know, they're a little vulnerable. So I didn't hear the full story. ModChat is saying that he got 3 years and $12 million in fines, 12 million crypto exchange thefts. So he didn't get 12 million in fines. He stole 12 million. And there's some confusion here whether or not he's actually stole $25 million in total and he's able to only pay a couple million in fees, which would mean he's going to spend three years in jail and then come out on top of that. We'll see. See, look at this. He made $1.68 million in a bug bounty. That's what I'm saying, dude. You didn't have to go to the dark side. You could have just, you know, done what you done and got paid and continued to work for Amazon. Here's my thing. This guy is going to go to jail because he got greedy and he's a complete donkey. Okay? Absolute. Hold on. Way to go. Hey, you know what? Way to go, law enforcement. People like this should be held accountable. Theft is not cool, whether it's thieving digital assets or real assets. You know, that you need to be held accountable. I'm absolutely loving it. So, yep. Okay, let's go.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Yes, there is a lesson here. Don't get caught cyber ready. Guys, okay, so really quickly, if you didn't know, I bring this up on stream like, maybe every couple months. I love studying fraud. I don't commit fraud. I'm not a criminal. I love sleeping easy at night. But just from a pure academic thirst trap for me is fraud. I love studying fraud. And I will tell you, most times, like a high percentage of times when fraud is discovered, it's because of greed. The fraud would have continued to perpetrate indefinitely if the fraudster had not been greedy. Oh, ask me about it at Jawjack and I'll share. One of my favorite books of all time is actually an academic textbook, but it's so good. Oh, it's so good.
Conveyor. It's Conveyor again, the market-leading AI software for answering security questionnaires and securely sharing your security posture and documents. Conveyor's State of the Security Review Report for 2024 was just released, and it's all about what the new era of InfoSec holds. Learn how positioning security and compliance early in the sales cycles increases win rates by 42% and what InfoSec teams need to prepare for as they move closer to the sales function. You can find the report at www.conveyor.com by clicking on the banner at the top of the page.
All right. Hey, Phil Stafford, I don't know. Maybe I used thirst trap wrong. I hear the Youngs using the term thirst trap. I thought it was appropriate, like the way I used it, but who knows? All right, let's go. All right, guys. Hey, shout out and thanks for being here. Thanks again. If you're getting educational value or entertainment value from the stream, go ahead and hit that like button on YouTube. It goes a long way to helping other people find it. We got 466 of you awesome people here right now. Let's party. Shout out again to the stream sponsors, Barricade Cyber, Delete Me, and Anti-Siphon Training. Anti-Siphon Training is disrupting the traditional training industry by offering cutting edge, high quality education to everyone, regardless of their financial position. Go check them out at antisiphontraining.com. They give their students the opportunity to learn skills, practice what is taught, and engage with their community in a very fun and inclusive way. Thank you so much. There's a link right there on stream to go to it. Shout out and thanks so much. You guys, amazing, amazing, amazing. Every single day, we do the Simply Cyber Community Challenge. Now, Justin IT Hooligan is got the baton. We couldn't find the post, so I don't know if IT Justin Hooligan even posted on LinkedIn. So are you in chat, IT Justin Hooligan? I don't see you. Anyways, so we had a big swing and a miss by Justin IT Hooligan, but we got someone new. Sonny O'Malley has been in chat, has asked for the baton. Please accept the challenge, Sonny O'Malley. We'll get that. Basically, here's the deal, y'all. If you want to blow up your LinkedIn network, make the feed all cyber and all value. Very easy technique. Go on LinkedIn and simply search for the hashtag Simply Cyber Community Challenge. You see that blue font down the bottom, that hashtag? Search for that hashtag on LinkedIn. It's going to come up with a bunch of people who've posted from the Simply Cyber community. Just go on and connect to those people, comment on their posts, and then connect to the people in comments. It's as easy as that. Connect to the people who are posting, comment on their posts, connect to the people in comments. Why is it so easy? Because once you comment, you'll get picked up in the feed by other people connecting with the people in comment. You see what I mean? So it's as easy as that. All right. So hopefully my thirst trap... fraud, like my appeal for fraud. All right, anyways, let's go. Every single day of the week is got a special little segment, and Mondays is for Simply Cyber Community Member, featured member of the week. I wanted to give a shout out. I'm not sure if he's in chat right now, but this is Nerman Zlatanovich. And Nerman, if I say it wrong, I apologize. Nerman, I'm going to drop a link in here because Nerman's only got 143 connections in. Those are rookie numbers. We can do better than that. Connect with Nerman, okay? There's Nerman right there in chat. Guys, this guy right here, he shows up on the regular. He's active in Discord. He gave me feedback on my Cyber 101 class. He just shows up. He's very helpful. Nerman, thank you so very much for what you do, and I'm really glad that you're part of the Simply Cyber community. Everybody, hello, Nerman. All right. So let's do this really quickly, guys. Where's my link? There we go. Let's get our la 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 la's on, everybody. Let's go. All right. Blowing out the copyright, music copyright in one swift stroke. Let's go. All right. Oh, man. 447 people. So we just lost like 20 people. Apparently the mid-roll isn't for everybody. All right, let's get back to the news and finish strong, y'all.
Firebird rat creator arrested in the U.S. and Australia. A joint operation between the Australian Federal Police and the FBI has led to the arrest of two individuals allegedly behind the development and distribution of the Firebird Remote Access Trojan, later rebranded as Hive. Firebird offered buyers stealthy access features, password recovery tools, and privilege escalation exploits. Law enforcement's investigation began in 2020 and led to the apprehension of an unnamed Australian man and California resident Edmund Shakmachian. The Australian man and Shakmachian face prison sentences of up to 36 years and 10 years, respectively.
All right. So, a couple threat actors making some malware. We got some Australian representation. Oi, oi, oi. Nice job. If I had to guess, this Australian lived on the east coast of Australia, perhaps in the Brisbane area, a little Gold Coast action, a little California action on the other side. So just a spot of water between the two. It was a rat tool. Let me see. So it's supposed to be a remote access tool, right? Which is legit, right? Oh, Casually Joseph, you should be aware this is at Casual Malware. So it's getting casual up in here. Law enforcement busted them.
Regulators! Malware. It was a...
All right. So the rat tool was sold on dedicated hacking forums to allow people to basically... remote in and do all the things that you would expect with some type of, you know, basically persistent malware. I'm just kind of seeing here the Bitcoin to pay for it, whatever. All right. So basically the FBI set up a sting operation, bought the rat from the guy, confirmed that it was in fact, malware and off and running. Okay. So here's the deal. This is basically post-exploitation, so you'd have to convince someone to install this, right? Chances are it would be quiet or not noisy or silent, stealthy. You might even hear it. And basically, it gets on the box, and then it allows a criminal or a threat actor to come and go as they please. Think of it as like a persistent mechanism. It can exploit permissions to allow them to operate as an administrator. They can dump credentials. They can do all the info stealing stuff. Basically, it's a rat, right? So we do things like, oh my God, TeamViewer, LogMeIn, like all these like remote access tools that basically are designed so IT administrators can jump into Carl's machine. And help them solve problems. Like, oh, hey, my computer isn't working, whatever. Let me remote in and see it. Now, typically, there's a lot of like overt, obvious things that someone's remoted into your box. Like you'll see the mouse moving. You'll have like a banner around your screen saying someone's in there. Sometimes you actually have to authorize that person to come in. This likely doesn't do that. Guys, I got to tell you, I'm loving law enforcement on a Monday morning, April 15th. Let's go. Law enforcement just cracking heads everywhere.
Telegram fixes Windows app 0 day caused by a typo. Telegram fixed a 0 day vulnerability in its Windows desktop application that automatically launches Python scripts. While some posts on X claimed it was a 0-click flaw, videos clearly show that a user needs to click a file to bypass the security warning and launch the script. Telegram typically displays a warning when a user clicks on a file with a known harmful extension like a .exe. However, developers misspelled the Python extension as .pywz instead of .pyzw, thus allowing the application to run Python scripts without displaying a warning. Telegram initially passed the issue off as a likely hoax, but a day later a proof-of-concept exploit was shared on the XSS hacking forum. The bug was reported to Telegram on April 10th, and they have fixed the errantly spelled extension in the source code. However, this fix did not appear to be live as of Friday afternoon.
All right, couple things here. One, Telegram, very popular messaging app. Threat actors love it, right? Absolutely love it. In fact, I'm doing a video on Flare. It's with the editors right now. Flare.io, really cool solution, platform, tool, whatever you want to call. That, you know, basically data mines the dark web. It's very cool. But anyways, Telegram, it does a lot with Telegram as well. Now, if you use the mobile app for Telegram, not a problem. Hey, Kathy Chambers. I see Kathy Chambers in here. But if you're using the Windows app, apparently there was a bug that allowed threat actors to basically get Python scripts to execute. Now, I want to point out, one, you'd have to click through a link, right? So you'd have to click through and pull down the Python script, okay? So this isn't, it's a 0 day, but it's not like a no-click 0 day, meaning that you would, as a victim of this particular attack, you would have to be part of the chain, the kill chain. Now, I don't like that Telegram came out and called it a hoax right away. I'm not saying that they should have said nothing, but calling it a hoax and being completely wrong is a bad look by Telegram. Second of all, shout out to whoever did this, XSS Forum, because they did the Telegram RCE. I'm going to play it on stage. You can see here. There you go. That's as simple as that. Hold on. That was a pretty quick demo. You can see here. They're looking at the Telegram feed, and it says your photo. Okay. So, okay. Yeah. It's as simple as that. So actually, this would be pretty easy to trick someone, because it's not like a Python file in Telegram that you'd have to click on. In the example, it says photo. So, you know, social engineering, a little attack there. Hey, Angular, thanks for the sub. So this is what, here, I'm going to drop a link to this. This is what the actual attack would look like. Telegram attack. So once there's a proof of concept, then obviously, people can basically prove that it's not a hoax. Also, I want to point out two quick things. One, if you're running Telegram in your environment or you know people that are using it, I would encourage you notify them to basically update their Telegram. I do run Telegram Fat Client on my Windows machine. I'm going to go ahead and look right now at it. I'm going to see settings. I don't see where it says update, honestly. So I'll have to get some more info on that for y'all. I'll do it during jawjacking. It's actually concerning me now. Update automatically. Oh, so hey, I just went into my Telegram Fat Client, and you could see under if you go into your Fat Client and look at your updates, basically it'll auto update if you have it set for that way, which is, you know, what I do. So go check that out if you haven't done it already. Educate your end users. The final thing I want to share with you that's pretty cool, pretty dope, is you'll know here. Look at, you can see here. Here's a screenshot of me opening my Fat Client, and you can see automatically. It's at the bottom. It says update automatically. So make sure you're doing that. The other thing I want to point out, and if you didn't know this, this is pretty important. This is super meta for our industry. You'll notice that the RCE, the remote code execution, POC, which is proof of concept, a proof of concept is basically code execution to demonstrate that a vulnerability can, in fact, be exploited. And almost always, security researchers will pop or they'll launch calc.exe or the calculator app. This is a wicked common technique. So just if you didn't know, if you are working on exploitation or you are, you know, doing whatever, popping calc is like kind of a standard. You could pop anything. You could pop Notepad. You could pop, Microsoft Word, whatever. But calc.exe is the, you know, kind of traditional accepted application to launch. Meaning if you can pop calc, you can pop anything with, you can launch any binary, right? So typically what you would really do is pop command.exe and start, you know, running code and stuff like that, or reach out to a network connection and pull down whatever. Shouldn't using a screen on Windows keep bugs out? Thanks to the super chat.
We just become best friends.
That bad butt flaw allowed command injection attacks on Windows. A researcher from Carnegie Mellon University has discovered a critical vulnerability dubbed bat bad butt that could allow a hacker to perform command injection on Windows. due to Windows default inclusion of the .bat and .cmd files in the path.ext environment variable. Runtimes can inadvertently execute batch files instead of the intended commands, leading to arbitrary command executions. Carnegie Mellon University published an advisory detailing 4 flaws in total. The bug impacts multiple programming languages, and some applications have provided a patch. However, other applications may require deployment of alternative mitigations.
All right, there's a lot to unpack here, okay? First of all, bad, but. You know, everybody's going to assume it's double T, right? Am I right? I thought it was, you know, bad, but, like booty, like your booty. You can't securely execute commands on Windows. This guy did a blog post. Now, I don't know if this is a private blog post for this guy, Ryotech, or if this is a security company publishing security research. As I mentioned last week, this is a massively useful way for security companies to market themselves, is by publishing security research. This particular one, impacts multiple programming languages and command injection. Command injection is basically being able to run whatever commands you want. As I mentioned in just the last story, it's very common to pop command.exe so you could start doing whatever you want. You could see here in the PowerShell script, it says here, command execute command, command.run. So this is literally popping whatever you want. I don't understand how it is related to the programming languages. It's a vulnerability that allows an attacker to perform command injection that depends on the create process function when specific conditions are met. So create process, like when you get into like Windows, Windows library, like Windows functions, the Windows operating system functions and libraries to basically call functions to execute stuff. Create process is a very popular one. Basically, it's exactly what it says. It's creating a process so you can then get system resources so you can then begin executing whatever it is, whether you are going to open a network connection or you're going to write to the environment or whatever. Because Windows default inclusion of bat and command files in the path environment variables, some runtimes inadvertently execute batch files instead of the command. The operating system executes batch files with cmd.exe, which is complicated parsing rules. All right, so the conditions that have to be in place for bad, but to execute is the application executes command on the Windows. Okay. It doesn't specify file extension. Command being executed contains user-controlled input. Okay. All right, this just seems like a really complicated piece of research. I like it. It sounds like it's been sorted out. So maybe this is just, this is a little bit of a popsicle headache for me to look at without having previously researched this. Way to go. I will tell you one other thing. This is academic research, but this is actually one of the more rare examples where this is directly related to, corporate security. And like, basically, this is something that should be mindful in practice, not just like a fringe use case. Final thing I'll point out is this researcher is a student at Carnegie Mellon, which I'm almost positive is in Philadelphia. Let's see, Carnegie Mellon University. Let's see. Yeah. Oh, it's in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. I knew it was in Pennsylvania, so I get a cigar. Carnegie Mellon is super legit when it comes to computer science. I'm sure their cybersecurity program is good, but like Carnegie Mellon, if I see somebody on a resume that has a computer science degree from Carnegie Mellon, I perk up. I'm like, ooh, wow, that is impressive. So just shout out, if you didn't know, Carnegie Mellon, super legit, super dope.
Open Tofu denies HashiCorp's code theft accusations. HashiCorp's law firm has issued a cease and desist order against open source infrastructure as code tool provider OpenTofu. HashiCorp has accused OpenTofu of repeatedly stealing HashiCorp's code, thus violating the terms of its Terraform Business Source License, or BSL. HashiCorp said OpenTofu incorrectly relabeled HashiCorp's code to make it appear as if it was made available under a separate HashiCorp license. HashiCorp said if OpenTofu does not comply, they reserve the right to send takedown notices to third-party hosting and source code repositories such as GitHub and litigate to stop further violations. OpenTofu's lawyers responded saying, quote, "The OpenTofu team vehemently disagrees with any suggestion that it misappropriated, missourced, or otherwise misused HashiCorp's BSL code," end quote.
All right. I really don't know. Yeah, Zitalpa, exactly. It is kind of funny that that's what they came up with. So I don't really understand. I've never heard of OpenTofu. I've never heard of HashiCorp. I think the TLDR of this story is more around licensing and copyright licensing. So a lot of us will use like the new GNU public license. You know, there's open source security license, the CC license, right? So a lot of us use software, and we don't really, you know, we don't really think of copyright law and, you know, stuff like that. Now, I play, you know, music all the time on this particular stream that gets copyright hit all the time. But this instance, basically, this is one company accusing another company of stealing its code. And I assume that the HashiCorp is making some money, or it's a business in some way, that there's revenue being generated by use of that code. And this other company, OpenTofu, is claiming that, that they're stealing it. Yeah, I've heard of Terraform. I've heard of Terraform as a, you know, as a cloud microservice, spin up, spin down systems. But I've never heard of OpenTofu or HashiCorp. So I'm assuming that they use Terraform for some, you know, cloud thing. I've never heard of the Terraform business source license code. Anyways, to me, this is basically just two businesses that are fighting and letting the lawyers duke it out. Unfortunately, it seems to be, it might be one of those ones where, like, whoever's got deeper pockets. HashiCorp owns Terraform. Oh, is that right? Oh, wow. Okay, hold on one second. Let's see. Terraform, HashiCorp. Let's look at it. Oh, Terraform is by HashiCorp. Okay. Okay. Well, then, I don't research these stories, so this is new to me. So, all right. So I thought Terraform was more, I didn't realize that, like, a company owned Terraform. All right. So HashiCorp, this actually has, deeper implications then. So OpenTofu is claiming that the Terraform stuff, I guess, violates license terms. This could be interesting. Definitely follow this one. I know, you know, a lot of businesses are using Terraform. Terraform is kind of a standard in, you know, cloud native applications. So we'll see. We'll see. Thank you, everybody, for helping me learn something today. Today I learned Terraform is owned by HashiCorp. Okay. Infrastructure automation. It's definitely used quite a bit. Thanks, Alana. Thanks, Phil Stafford.
And that does it for today's cybersecurity headlines. But just
all right. That does it for today's cybersecurity headlines. 494 people in here. Can we pump those numbers to 500? My goodness gracious. Love it, everybody. Okay, so check it out. Let's giddy up on this. All right, guys. It's episode 600. Jesus, criminy. Special shout out to all of you for being here. I can't believe 600 episodes. We started it a couple years ago. I had no idea it was going to turn into this. I want to thank all of you for being here today. I hope you got value from the stream, educational value, entertainment value. And, you know, come back every single day at 8 a.m. Eastern time because we're doing it like bosses up in here. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. If you got a boogie out here, go for it. I'll see you later. Otherwise, we're going to pivot over to some jawjacking. If you don't know what jawjacking is, it's basically like a 30-minute ask me anything. You got questions, I got answers. I'll tell you what, people. Honestly, I get DM'd like probably 100 times a day. I'm not even exaggerating. Like 100 times a day with people like, hey, help me this. Like, here's my resume. Review this. Oh, like, here, like, give me a career path. Give me, like, answer my questions. Like, this is time allocated for that. I can't respond to hundreds of DMs daily. It would break me. But we do carve out jawjacking for that. So if you got to get out of here, get out of here. And I thank all of you for being here. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber, episode 600, April 15th. Do your taxes. Until next time, stay secure. Shout out to the stream sponsors. Delete Me, Barricade Cyber, Anti-Siphon. Thank you all very much. Let's get Jerry Guy in here. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Jawjacking. This is your host, Jerry Guy, coming hot off the heels of that nerd, Dr. Gerald Osher's Daily Cyber Threat Brief. We got AMA right now, so if you want to ask any questions, myself, the mods, and the community will happily help you get the answers that you're seeking. Thanks, Cyber Kill Jane, aka Jessica Propes, for being here. Do your taxes. Thanks, Jason Bagwell. 600 episodes, guys. Shout out. Super pumped for the Delete Me sponsorship. That'll be running for 2 weeks, the rest of April. Guys, I'm telling you, like, you know, obviously they paid for a sponsorship, but the service is actually pretty cool. Getting threatened with a SWAT in Discord was unnerving and really angering. The Delete Me stuff, you just like literally just fill out a form and then they take care of all the rest. So, all right, Eric Taylor's in chat and pointing my attention to something. Let's take a look here. All right, we got a story here in chat. Let's take a look really quickly. Well, you're looking behind the scenes right now at my production window. So, obviously, Streamlabs chose the wrong desktop to share, but just so you know, this is what it looks like. Here's my Spotify, here's my mod chat, here's my Streamlabs, here's my stream. So this is the producer interface. Kathy Chambers probably just broke into a sweat. All right, let's do this. All right, so here we go. Let's look at this together. This is hot. So, from Duo, hi, we're writing to inform you of an incident involving one of the Duo telephony suppliers that Duo uses to send MFA messages via SMS and VoIP. So, basically, there's been an impact on MFA. Cisco is actively working with the providers to investigate. It's their understanding that a threat actor gained access to the provider's internal systems. They don't say who the provider is. It's a someone who Duo telephony suppliers. Okay. They're using a provider's employees cred. So in like basically an attack on a business to download a set of SMS message logs pertaining to your Duo account. The threat actor downloaded message logs for between March 1st and March 31st. The logs didn't contain any messages, but did contain the phone numbers. Okay. All right, hold on. Employees' creds have been reset. Logs have been analyzed, and they're notifying us. Hold on. The impact is the threat actor obtained access to the logs through successful social engineering. Yes, contact your customers with affected phone numbers and the message logs to notify them without undue delay. Okay, so here's the deal. basically some provider, I know you guys can't see this, some provider that basically Duo uses to send text messages got employees' credentials compromised, and the employee, some threat actor logged in. They weren't able to see the messages. They are only able to get the phone number. Like, I know Eric Taylor's dropped this in chat. To me, like, okay, like, I don't know. Like, honestly, this isn't that big a deal. I mean, it sucks that someone got compromised, but like, your text messages, the content of the text messages was not compromised. It's just your phone numbers. So a threat actor can tell these phone numbers use Duo in some way for multi-factor on some service. This isn't great, but the way I'm reading this, this is not a big deal from an impact perspective, right? If we practice best practices, if we have, you know, passwords that are not reused, then all the threat actor is going to be able to tell is like, oh, this phone number uses MFA for some service that Duo helps them with. Okay. So, but it's interesting to know. Okay. Oh no. All right. So hold on. Kathy Chambers says, good morning, Gerald Osier, Simply Cyber. Happy to be back on chat. Wanted to say I was proud to represent Team SC at Hackspace Con and got to meet Kimberly Canfixit and Casually Joseph in real life. Absolutely. I got to tell you, Kathy Chambers and Kimberly Canfixit were representing with the Simply Cyber, the old 76 looking logo. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Thank you so very much. Kathy, it was great to see you. Oh my gosh, just so we can all be on the same page. Oh, they got free shipping right now. Who would have known it? I never checked this, but they have free shipping right now if you want. But yeah, this is what Kathy Chambers and Kimberly Canfixit was repping. I actually think this hoodie looks pretty dope too. All right. Anyways, if anyone's interested in that, I typically don't push the store, but I'll drop it right now. Really quick, Pete, with a super chat, jumping, cutting the line. Have you heard good things about the OPM CyberCorps Scholarship for Service Program? I just got my first cleared help desk job, and I'm considering a master's in cyber for that program. Love the stream. Well, Pete.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep. Thanks for the super chat, Peter. Also, OPM CyberCorps Scholarship. I have not. Oh, God. Hold on. I hit the wrong button. Hold on. I hit the wrong button. Give me a second. All right. I have not heard of the OPM CyberCorps Scholarship, but let's look at it, right? And thanks for the super chat, obviously, right? OPM CyberCorps. Also, congratulations on cleared job. If you could do a scholarship for service, why not do that? I love it. Let's see. How do we... let's see what this is all about. I'll tell you what, Peter. I would absolutely do this. I'll tell you why I would do this, okay? I haven't heard of this, but listen, OPM suffered a major breach years ago. So, you know, like Catherine Archuleta, who was the director of OPM, she got like dragged through the town square and then fired. Like it was a massive thing. So for OPM, they're responsible for like, they're like HR for the US government. For them to have this scholarship for service, it's probably pretty good. I would assume that the... potentially the NSA was involved in helping develop the curriculum. If you can get a job, it's like committing to go to college for free and then join the military afterwards. It's like the best of both worlds, in my opinion. One, you're given education. Two, you're given a job, like, oh, guaranteed as you leave. You just got to take it seriously. You have a clearance, it sounds like. So I would absolutely do this, Peter. To me, this is a solid career plan for you. So get up on it and giddy up. It's awesome. All right, let's keep looking. What's the book you're talking about? The fraud book? Oh, yes. Let me get that going. Check this out. So good. Now, Joseph Wells, if you didn't know, Joseph Wells is considered by like fraud people, like general fraud, financial fraud. This guy is considered like the dude, right? Like I should try to get Joseph Wells on stream because this guy is awesome. This book right here, this is not the book I was thinking about. The book I'm thinking about is Principles of Fraud Examination. So let's go. Where is it? Oh my God. Here it is. Principles of Fraud Examination. This book right here, you want to talk about a thirst trap? Woo! Get on board with this sucker, okay? Now check this out. I don't know if I'm going to be able to show it to you on stream. Can we do more than just the cover? Is there like a read? The cool thing about the fraud book is it's a complete taxonomy. Let's see if we get the taxonomy picture. Oh my God, give it to me. You want to talk about infographic? Look at all this fraud. Oh, it's so good. There it is. Okay, so look at this. Basically, in the world of fraud, like fraud has been committed for years and years and years, right? There's no new way to commit fraud. There's just new tools to commit old fraud, right? This taxonomy right here is literally, if anyone is going to commit fraud, it will 99.99% of the time fall into one of these buckets, right? These things right here are fraud. Now, what makes it awesome is that the Principles of Fraud Examination takes that taxonomy, and then every chapter is like one of those axiomatic ways of committing fraud. And then there's like four or five case studies fully explaining how someone perpetrated that fraud and how they got caught. And like, dude, like false billing, fake invoices, fake vendors, right? Like those are all ways that I'm familiar with committing fraud. But dude, there's like 30 other ways to commit fraud. It's absolutely fascinating. I'm telling you, I love this book. It's like, it's a textbook, right? It was my textbook for a class in one of my masters around privacy. But guys, oh, it is so good. Like just looking at that infographic, it's like, oh, I just want to like print it out and wipe, like smear my face on it. Oh, it's so good. Definitely check out this book. Oh, it's so good. I might go get it and bring it on stream on Wednesday. I just want to hug it. Have you ever heard of Stuxnet? Soulshine asks. Yeah, of course. Yes, absolutely. Soulshine, I have heard of Stuxnet. Let me tell you all something about Stuxnet. Stuxnet is absolutely legit. Stuxnet was considered one of the most sophisticated attacks. Some people might argue the most sophisticated attack in history. I like to give that nod to SolarWinds, but Stuxnet was a U.S.-Israel-based joint effort where they essentially set Iran's nuclear program back a decade by having a malicious USB device that exploited like seven different zero days get picked up by an engineer in Natanz and plugged into the network there. It was air-gapped network. And it routed through all of the environment and ultimately got to the uranium enrichment devices that spin cyber physical systems, and absolutely destroyed it while reporting that everything was A-OK to the engineers at the workstation. Brilliant piece of work. If you're interested in reading about it, Let me go to simplycyber.io/books really quickly. Nicole Pelroth, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends, has an entire chapter on Stuxnet. If you're interested, this book, I can't recommend this book enough. Whoever didn't give it 5 stars right here, 4.5 stars, whoever didn't give it a full 5 stars, you're killing me, Smalls. Like, this book is so f-ing good. Giddy up on it. I bought it in October 2022. So good. Darknet Diaries, I bet anything has a podcast episode on Stuxnet, if I had to guess. So thanks, Soulshine, for bringing it up. David P. Jerry, do you have a code for Delete Me for us to enter when signing up? Yes. David P., look on stream right now. If you use the code SimplyCyber, SimplyCyber, Simply Cyber, you get 20% off. Guys, I'm telling you, just really quickly, since David P. mentioned it, the Delete Me thing, like literally you log in, you put your information there, like, you know, your email address, your address, whatever. and then they go off. It takes like a week for them to go off, and then you get a report back that basically they're off and running. It really, really feels like outsourcing managing your privacy. I'll be talking about it for the next 2 weeks, but like literally you just fill out a form once and they go off and do it. And there's tons of data brokers that they come back with. I'd have to pull the report up, but it's super, super slick. So if you go to joindeleteme.com/simplycyber, in fact, I haven't even gone to the site. I don't even know what it looks like. Let me pull it up. joindeleteme.com/simplycyber. There we go. I'm gonna drop the link in chat, actually, guys. So I'll tell you two things, and this is, you know, guys, this is me saying it from a Simply Cyber perspective. This is a really good sponsorship. Like, I like the product, I like the people I've been working with, and the sponsor dollars is good. So please, even if you're not sure if you want to use this or not, at least do me a favor and click on the link. Get those clicks up. That would be really, really appreciated. And if that doesn't work, mods, let me know. But this is what it is. If you use the code SimplyCyber, it'll automatically apply the promo code. It's very cool. Let me do this really quick. I'll keep answering questions. I'm going to log into my Delete Me account live on stream, but I want to make sure that I don't dox myself. Unless, you know, Charles Finfrock is here. Let me see. I'm logging in. Stand by. Stand by to stand by. Hold on. I definitely have a Delete Me account. I'll have to figure it out later. Oh, the banner is wrong on stream. Oh, let me see. Oh, hey, thanks so much. George, you gave me a super chat for that too. Thanks, brother.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
All right. I have corrected it now. Joindeleteme.com. George Strasburger, I should pay you $5 for helping me with that. Thank you. Thanks, George. George, I genuinely appreciate it. Thanks so much, dude. That was a bit of a donkey move on my part, and genuinely appreciate it. What's up, Jeremy Williams from the Boo Boo Bus? It's been a minute. Good to see you. All right, let me keep answering questions. Going to B-Sides this weekend, Jason Summers, and planned on dressing for success. Button up in slacks. Will that be overdressed? Every conference pick I see, people super casual. So Jason, this is a good question. B-Sides is typically pretty casual, but I would say if you were wearing a button up and slacks, I don't think that would be overdressed. I think that would be pretty professional. And a lot of times, at least in my experience, vendors at B-Sides are typically smaller businesses. You guys correct me if I'm wrong. I know I've seen Black Hills, but they're special. But I've seen like small to mid-sized businesses. So anyways, the point is, a lot of times the people working the booth at B-Sides conferences are typically the CEO of the company or someone higher up or an executive. So I think dressing not formal like a suit and tie, but dressing with a button down and slacks just demonstrates that you are there with a purpose and that you are professional. I would do it. I would absolutely do it, especially if you're looking for success. You can still be casual in the way you interact with people. You just look professional. I would totally do it. Also, very cool, Jason's. Go crush it. To those who went to HackspaceCon this weekend, hope you enjoyed it, guys. Fella Dada says, how can I get the shirt in Canada? Does this company not ship to Canada? Hold on, where's my... I'm trying to find Simply Cyber. This doesn't ship to Canada? The free shipping expires today, apparently, too. FYI. Hold on. Who is the platform that I use for this? Anyways, hold on. I got to figure this out. Hold on one second. I got to figure this out myself. This is like a embedded. Who is this? Spreadshirt. Okay, hold on. Can I get shipping to Canada? Spreadshirt. All right, so let's see right here. All right, let's see. Orders shipped outside the United States are subject to customer duty fees. The fees are governmental in nature. We state in checkout next to the international shipping options. The confirmation of these fees may apply. International shipping times are not guaranteed. So who asked that question? Feladada. It looks like they do ship to Canada. It just there's some additional fees that might be added to it. I hope that helps. Thank you, mods. Casually, Joseph, we'll have to get you sorted out with some Simply Cyber merch. Jason Summers, we already answered this. Is this duo the chat app? No. Thomas Marquette, Duo is it's like an authenticator app, right? But here's the thing. Duo is like a multi-factor authentication tool, but Duo is actually a larger, as far as I know, like a larger identity and access management kind of provider thing. And this particular instance had to do with a telephony provider that Duo uses to push six-digit text messages out. So Duo doesn't own the telephony solution. They partner with a third party to do that. All right. Okay, so apparently I've used Thirst Trap incorrectly. All right, so okay. I'm sorry I'm using Thirst Trap wrong. But I am an old, you see the gray in the beard? That means I'm not authorized to use terms like thirst trap, mid, gyat, etc. I actually did make burgers last night for the family. And my wife, Mrs. Osier, she said that the burgers were juicy. And I was like, oh, so these are like gyat burgers, right? Because they're juicy. You guys remember juicy? Remember juicy was a thing? All right, space tacos. Jerry, have you considered adding an infographic channel in the Simply Cyber Discord? Ah, that's so funny. Space tacos. I have not. I mean, obviously, infographics are so good, though. All right. Good morning, beautiful family. Good to see you, Jesse Johnson. What else, guys? Definitely mod love. Love that. Robert Rittenhouse with the Giat. Simply Cyber's a thirst trap. That's so funny.
That Hansel's so hot right now.
Infographics and fraud are so hot right now. Joel Harrison. It's easier to get some things in Canada than it is a t-shirt or cigarettes based on close friends' daily walk-ins I hear about. Nice. I'm so hungry right now. I didn't eat breakfast. I drank a pot of coffee. I definitely want to get some steaks. Definitely want to have a breakfast bar. Oh, hey, I have some production news or whatever. For the 330 people that are still here, I should have said this during jawjacking. Tomorrow I leave to go to Columbia, South Carolina. And Wednesday morning, I will be in Columbia. I'm keynoting a conference on Wednesday morning in person in Columbia, South Carolina. And my talk begins at 9:15 a.m. Eastern time, which means like the conference opens at 8 and I do the stream at 8. So on Wednesday morning, April 17th, episode 602 will be a 2x speed version. I'm going to try to do the whole stream in 30 minutes. So please, grant me some grace. I don't have the ability to do the long form one. I don't have, I can't outsource the stream that morning. So I will be doing the 2X. Hold on. If you guys want to know what event it is, it's this right here. This right here. If you're in Colombia and you want to come, it's if you're a student, it's $50. If you're a student, it's $50. It is at the, I guess it's in Greenville. Whoops. Jeez. Good thing I just Googled this or I would have driven to the wrong city. What a donkey. Oh, my God.
You are so dumb. You are really dumb. For real.
All right. So I would have gone to the wrong city. I'm going to Greenville, South Carolina tomorrow to give a talk at the SC Hymns Annual Spring Conference. My talk is called Siri Scalpel, Please. Oh, here we are. You can see right here. Keynoting. Look at all this. Look at all this, like, fat stacks. I'm stacking certs. Anyways, I'm giving a talk called Siri Scalpel, Please. And it's basically everything you want to know about AI in healthcare right now. So if you're interested, come giddy up on it. But Wednesday will be a turbo 4X a morning threat brief, okay? This is so funny, yes. So this is mod chats are having a laugh right now at me. Apparently this is me in Wednesday morning in Colombia trying to figure out where the conference is. I should probably verify that I booked a hotel room in the correct city. That's a problem. All right, let's go. All right, so what else? So, I just want to tell everybody that Wednesday morning, I will be very quickly going through the top cyber news brief. And I'll explain that to everybody in mods on Wednesday if we could let people know that too. So what else? Kathy Chambers. I don't even know what Kathy Chambers is loving it, but if Kathy Chambers is all caps loving it, I'm on board. Let's go. Let's go, Kathy. Flaming Donkey Gang is thirsty for Simply Cyber Threat Actor Academy. Oh, there's a lot packed into there. Jay and Michelle. Kathy Chambers needs, guys, I'm telling you what, I try to stay organized and stuff, but it's hard. Here's a fun thing. What is this? Am I in a meeting right now? No. What is this? Oh, shit, I'm in a meeting. Oh, no, I'm not. Crap. I missed a meeting. Hold on one second. I thought it was for 10 a.m. They scheduled it. I think the time zone thing got messed up. Hey, just seeing this. I thought our meeting was for 10 a.m. Eastern time. I'm streaming live right now, literally, till 9:30 a.m. Sorry, guys. So to your point about needing an assistant, I literally am in a meeting. I'm in a meeting right now, but it's okay. I stream till 9:30. What was the story of the person you had to block from Discord? Jazzy Jazz asks. Okay, so on Discord the other day, there was some... Listen, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. I try to, you know, assume positive intent, okay? And on Thursday or like last week at some point, somebody on Discord was actively in chat posting malware, but screenshots of like info stealing malware. And they were kind of wrapping it around the context of like security research and bug bounty, but it was super thin how they were shaping it. And I basically intervened and I said, hey, listen, this is a violation of the server rules. we're not sharing Black Hat techniques, right? Threat Actor Academy is a joke. Like, we're not doing this here. I'm assuming that positive intent, but we're going to delete these posts. And, you know, just, you've been warned, okay? A couple days go by. I don't think anything of it. And then I come into my studio. This person must be internet, like in Europe or something, because I came into the studio and there was a whole bunch of chat. But basically, this person had gone into DMs with another person and had either sold them malware or shared some type of malware or exploit with them. I think it was an exploit. And the person used the exploit to get a bug bounty and get paid. And this person was upset that they had basically been robbed, essentially, by this other person in DMs, okay? Now, here's what happened. They posted that I had created that person, right? Like that I not like manufactured the account, but like that they were a pupil of Simply Cyber and somehow I was responsible for that individual committing fraud against them, which, by the way, they're doing exploits and malware type stuff. And that this person was gonna give me 12 hours to make it right or else. And then, you know, obviously I was asleep at the time. So like some time passed, they come back, they're sharing screenshots. They said that they were going to, you know, SWAT me if I didn't get it done. Also, they came over the top rope. I don't even know if he knows this, but he brought Eric Taylor in and said that Eric Taylor was also going to be in scope of his actions, whatever. So basically, this person wanted me to make them whole somehow. So I responded to each, you can go back to the server and find it. I responded to each of their arguments. I explained that I understand their frustration with being robbed. Very, you know, I can empathize. It's very victimizing. I understand. Also, they had been warned that they're not allowed to share these things. Threatening swatting anybody, including me, is a very gross violation of server rules. And you're going to be banned as soon as I'm done writing this post. And then I outlined a couple other things of what is acceptable behavior and why our community as Simply Cyber is safe and inclusive and why there is no zero tolerance for that behavior in this community. And then I banned them. I've also told the mods, by the way, mods, if you're listening, I told the mods, but I'll reiterate it here so the greater community knows. I told the mods that they have full authority to ban anybody on the server at any point if they feel it's a good decision. I've asked the mods to be mods because I trust them and I believe in them, and they have full authority. If they ban someone, I 100% back them. 100% back them, because I know they're not going to flippantly ban somebody, right? We have no tolerance for that behavior on this server. All right, let's see what's up. Yeah, exactly. Eric Taylor, you did nothing. I don't even know why you were involved. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, thanks, LeGrot. It sucks. Honestly, it sucks. I mean, yet another reason why the Delete Me sponsorship and service was so timely. I want my address removed from all these data brokers. I don't want to be doxxed. I sure as hell don't want to be swatted. Are you kidding me? I have a family. I have kids. Me and Joseph. Okay. Okay. Yeah, exactly, Jay and Michelle. Ain't nobody got time for that. So if you are interested, definitely check out that Delete Me thing. Here, I'm going to drop it up here again. Oh, it's already on stream. Yeah, check it out. Obviously, if you click through the link, I would appreciate it because it'll help the channel. Even if you don't buy the service, I believe clicking through on the link will help. Here's the thing. I'll just tell you guys this plainly. Delete Me. It's a service I use. It's a service I know other people use. I like the service. They've agreed to sponsor for 2 weeks as a trial. And if they see good, I don't know, numbers, whatever. I don't know. If they want, they will sign a longer sponsorship, which would be huge because Simply Cyber could use the sponsorship money, frankly. The Cyber 101, just so you guys know, the Cyber 101 course that I spent like literally 10 plus months on is not selling. Like, just to be plain and transparent, it's not selling. It's not really a product people want, apparently. I thought it was going to go gangbusters. It did not. So the way that I was kind of funding the business for 2024 is kind of dorked up right now. So this Delete Me sponsorship is, you know, very, very much appreciated. So go click on the link. Go check it out. Cyber Eddie says, thoughts on the use of OPSEC for cyber criminals. Just watch Mental Outlaws video on how cyber criminals get caught a lot more through OPSEC failures versus technical failures. Yeah, 100%. Listen, guys, digital forensics investigators, law enforcement, you know, the internet doesn't forget. If you look at all these different, like, look, go look at how Silk Road and Ross Ulbricht got caught. He had basically used an email address on a forum years before asking a question. It was either Ross Ulbricht or it was the guy who got caught with Alpha Bay out of Thailand. Either way, dude, if you're going to become a criminal, you've got to get high-end OPSEC or you will get caught. Like, the internet doesn't forget. The Wayback Machine, if you're a hot mess express, you will get picked up. And it could be things that you did long before you decided to be a criminal, right? So, yeah. Cyber Eddie, I don't know who Mental Outlaws is, but that would be a cool video. Mental Outlaws, OPSEC, cyber criminals. Let's check it out. All right, I'm going to have to go after this. I think this might be the video. Bad OPSEC, how Tor users get caught. Okay, this is cool. It's 3 years old. I'm on board. Let's go. Here, I'll drop a link in chat for everybody. I'm going to watch this video. What did I say? Oh, yeah, Alpha Bay. All right. All right, guys. Hey, it's 9:30. I'm going to boogie out of here. Thank you all so very much for hanging. High five and good times. Shout out to, yes, Jason Bagwell. Pepperidge Farm remembers. Thank you, everybody. Hey, it's okay, Tim McDonald. It's okay. Hey, speaking of courses, check this out. I dropped this in stream. I dropped this on LinkedIn the other day and people loved it. I spent most of Sunday building out the Vulnerability Analyst Masterclass. I don't know if you guys saw this, but basically the whole Vulnerability Management Analyst Masterclass, which is very similar to the GRC Analyst Masterclass. I've built it all out. I've just got to finish the deck and do recording, but this class is going to be coming a lot faster than the Cyber 101 did. Frankly, again, because the Cyber 101 isn't selling and I need to justify revenue in order to be in business, right? I can't just, you know, pretend to go out here and work every day and not generate revenue. So I'm working my tail off on getting this course to market as soon as possible. So if you guys are excited about that, you know, it's something to look forward to. I'm super pumped. I'm actually considering doing, I studied a technique that another online course creator has used where basically, if you're interested in this, let me know. And then I got to get out of here. Where like I offer like 50 students the opportunity to buy the course at a reduced cost while I'm building it and have them go through and meet weekly with those 50 students, solicit feedback, make sure that the course has everything that everyone wants and everybody's super pumped. And that way I kind of front load a little bit of revenue in order to keep the lights on here. And then also make sure that the course is so awesome. So I might do that. Like basically, just so everyone knows, I'm of the mindset that the course will be $150, the same as the GRC Analyst Masterclass, and that I would offer the course for $100 to this advanced student population, and then I would walk through it with them and meet weekly and solicit feedback and all those other things. So that is the method that I'm thinking about. That's what I'm thinking. So stay tuned. We'll see. Ooh, nice. OSIN at B-Sides KC. I like it. All right, guys, I got to get out of here. I got a meeting. Thank you all so very much for being here, for being amazing, for continuing the fight. Episode 600. Awesome. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Until next time, stay secure. If you enjoyed that content, keep the cybersecurity train going by connecting with the other Simply Cyber community resources. We have the Discord server that's lively and always keeps the conversation going. You can connect with me directly on LinkedIn. And also every single weekday morning on the Simply Cyber channel, we're doing live daily cyber threat briefings, 8 a.m. Eastern time, as well as Thursday at 4:30 p.m. We're doing live stream interviews with industry experts, and we produce videos that we push out every Wednesday morning. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. I hope you enjoyed the content, and we'll see you in the next one.